There's just so much more to hear.
Download our podcasts at DubaiEye1038.com.
As the weather in the UAE gets a little bit chilly, it's time that we start to look to comfort food to keep us warm and give us that much needed boost. Whether it's the time honored Sunday roast, a pot of deep spicy curry, good old fish and chips, or a sticky pudding. We all have our favourites and we want to hear yours. What are your go-to comfort food dishes that you love to whip up that make you feel good just from the very first bite? Joining me at table today are James McDonald, head chef at Tom Aitken's Pots, Pans and Boards at JBR, Riyad Hamid, the one and only honey explorer and founder of Balkis Honey, plus food writer, keen eater, photographer and blogger at My Custard Pie, Sally Prosser. They'll be sharing their favourites, but we'd love to hear from you. Do you have a family recipe that's been passed down lovingly, or maybe you put your own spin on comfort food? Maybe it's something that you love to grab at the shops, at the markets. What is it that ticks all the boxes for you? There will be photos and video of everything happening in the studio, so make sure that you're following us on the Dubai Eye Facebook and Instagram pages for more. And don't forget, and it is now time to
introducing the panel.
To introduce our guest, James McDonald. Hello, welcome.
Hello.
Good to have you back.
Thank you very much. It's nice being back.
I love listening to you. You're a fellow Aussie, of course, but one that spent many, many years in London. And I was telling you earlier that your accent is exactly like, it's half Brizzy, Brisbane, and half London, and it's just,
I know,
it's amazing,
I know,
listening to you.
Yeah, it is. It kind of goes in and out, depending on who I'm with and what kind of a mood I'm in. Like, usually when I'm very happy, I'm quite Londoner. When I get upset, I think that's when the Brisbane comes out of me.
Yeah,
so, yeah.
Yeah, the tropical Brizzy comes out of you. But, you know, of course, you had extensive experience in London, and you worked with Tom in London.
I never got the chance to work with Tom, but I ate in a lot of his restaurants in London. A lot of my friends actually work with Tom. And so, yeah, it's really quite cool, like, working with him now. And, you know, the brand's such a cool brand. And Tom's such a nice guy. And I know that he's been on the radio as well here. So,
yes.
You know, you've met him. And he's such a, you know, he's such a great chef to work with. And, you know, just he's so inspiring as well. So, yeah, I'm quite fortunate working with him now. So, yeah.
Yeah. No, I mean, that's the brilliant thing, though. Pots, pans and boards. It really is all about that comfort food as well, which
is
really the theme of the show. That, you know, it's those big tables, sharing tables, where you just bring everybody, you know, family and friends gathering around, all eating out of the same dishes and sharing that food that makes you feel so good.
Well, it is. It's exactly that. You know, it's comfort food, but, you know, it's just looked through the eyes of a Michelin star chef. And, you know, that's what gives it that little bit tweaks, you know, like the Tom's roast, like you touched on, like today's prize, you know, how we, you know, we brine the meat first, you know, we slow roast it, you know, we take care of it. It's just not like when my mum used to do it and chuck it in the oven and burn it and overcook it every time. It's actually lovely. It's nice. It's juicy. Down to the Yorkshire pudding. You know, Tom's come up with such a great recipe that they always turn out fantastic. And, you know, that's the special thing about working with someone like that. It's those little things that can make the comfort food just that extra step forward.
Yeah, because it's something that I think around all comfort food, it's got a melt in your mouth. It has got to be that satisfying feeling.
Exactly. And it's got to be finished with, like, a perfect sauce.
Yeah.
Like, the sauce, I got to say, like, you know, we're talking about comfort food. And most great comfort foods come with gravy. And if you don't have a good gravy or a good sauce to finish with it, I'm sorry, you've lost the game. You've lost the game completely. You need a good sauce or a good gravy to go with any comfort food.
Riyad is sitting there nodding to everything that you are saying.
Absolutely. I'm all about comfort food.
Welcome back, by the way.
Thank you very much. Yeah, thanks a lot, love. Yeah. How you doing, Sally? All right?
I'm doing well. It's good to see you, man.
I was just
a bit browner than normal.
You know, it was that kind of sun in that the south of Portugal, a place called Monchique.
Yeah.
And it was just really hot. It was, well, it was during the day, and that sun just kind of, you know, kind of bings you in the face, and it's lovely, yeah. So I'm a bit brown, I am a bit more tanned, aren't I?
You are.
Got a top up on my existing little brown tan. I have.
Got a refresher. Got a color in you.
Yeah. Got a bit of a refresher.
Oh, we're loving it. But, yeah, you were nodding all the way to the gravy and the sauce and Your comfort food, Mr. Riyad.
Well, you know, the thing is I mean, exactly like what James was saying, in the sense that you need a good gravy. And being from the being from the north of England, from Yorkshire, we do love our gravy. And so, for me, it's really simple, to be honest with you. I mean, I do love big fat chips. I love chips. I love fried eggs. Yeah.
Yep.
And just that little dibby dip into that kind of like egg yolk with some chips is amazing. It really is. But saying that, I'd love that Sunday roast, you know, that kind of the chips, the veggies, the, you know, that kind of gravy,
the Yorkshire pudding,
of course, that Yorkshire pudding is amazing,
just to soak up all that gravy.
Exactly,
you need that Yorkie there.
But I like it kind of crunchy, you know. It's got to be crunchy
on the outside but soft in the middle.
Exactly, yeah. It's a bit like me in a way, actually. I mean, so and the thing is, with that Yorkshire pudding, you can actually use it with as a dessert as well. I use it as a dessert, so I'll put like heaps of, like, you know, double cream on, then put my honey on top of it, and it's got to be a specific honey that I put on top of it. Now, if you've tried that, you think there's no dessert like it. It's
amazing.
But you're
absolutely right. The kind of batter of a Yorkshire pudding definitely fit. Now that I think about it, it definitely fits a dessert as well.
Sally, it's amazing. You've got to try it. You've got to try it. It's amazing.
I think we just found our new restaurant.
Yeah, that is amazing.
Sally, I need to get your take on this, because you're just laughing. You just can't believe what you're hearing.
Well, exactly. Well, this is made for me, this program, because custard is in my name.
Exactly.
I could live on custard. But I'm, you know, going to have an issue with Ria appropriating gravy for the north. I have to say, these southerners, we love gravy too. And actually, with a roast dinner, the gravy is actually the most important. It doesn't matter what you roast, what the meat is, you have to have the gravy. I was brought up on comfort food. It's very economical as well. A good mac and cheese, going back to the sauce again, macaroni cheese, actually. Macaroni cheese.
But cheese is a big one, isn't it?
Totally. Yeah, but melted into the sauce. Simmered, stews.
Are you putting in cheddar in there? What kind of cheeses are you putting in there?
Cheddar for me. Cheddar all the way.
A good cheddar.
Maybe a little bit of parmesan on the top before it goes under the grill. But yeah, a really good cheddar.
Sounds lovely.
From cheddar. From Somerset.
Exactly.
We need to get a takeout,
From the source. Coming
exactly.
From the source. Lots of your texts are already coming in on this one. Muddy says, chicken risotto. Okay. I want you to elaborate on that, Muddy, and tell us exactly how you make it. I want you to get us our mouths watering here. I love this text that's coming. Comfort food makes you comfortably fat. I completely agree. Yeah. I can't think of a comfort food that doesn't make you fat. Now that I'm trying to think, no.
There isn't. It doesn't exist.
No, because you don't really make friends with salad. So
exactly,
I'm sorry.
Yeah, they're kind of enemies when it comes to comfort. They make you uncomfortable, actually.
Because, I mean, like, you know, all of that aside, you do need the fat. Fat and the butter,
but
the cheese. Now it's proven to be good for you, but, you know, not too much of it. But that is part of the satisfaction that you get from this food, that it there's a richness there that you get in as well. Chili con carne as well, only my own recipe. Noodle soup from beef bone broth, if I can get it out. That's from Yannick. Yeah, definitely. A really good bone broth. That is, especially if you're feeling a little bit under the weather.
I had some this morning. It was beautiful.
Yeah.
Really good.
It
is amazing. Especially when I'm kind of, I can feel I'm coming down with a little bit of a, kind of a bit of sore throat, a little bit of a cold. So I kind of, a good bone broth in the morning, a big fat jug of it.
Yeah.
Get it down.
Yeah. Get it down,
get
definitely.
Get it down.
It just, it hits the spot, doesn't
it? It does, it does.
If you're feeling it, bone broth all the way, and it's so easy to make. You just chuck everything, chuck a chicken into the pot with, you know, an onion, bay leaf, and, you know, I put in cardamom, whatever.
It's beautiful.
Even now, like, you don't get that cooking these days. People are lazy, I'm sorry, but they don't use the bones.
Do you think
I think so. Like, you know, that's something I grew up on. You know, we would never throw anything away. And I still have that in my kitchens now. I try teaching all my chefs that nothing gets thrown away. You can use everything. And bone broth is something you don't really find these days. Obviously, in my cuisine, we use bones to make stocks and sauces and our broths and stuff. But day-to-day home No. Like, I still keep all my chicken carcasses. I like frying them off.
Yes.
I like putting stock in that. And I blend it. And I actually make a chicken bisque from my chicken bones.
Yeah.
And I actually feel stronger the next day because I feel like I've just eaten all these bones. And I'm like, whoa, come on, world.
I can see the biceps expanding as you say that, James.
It wasn't called a bone broth, was it?
No,
I mean, the thing is, it was just soup with us. Marag.
Yeah,
it's just like at home, your mom used to make.
Yeah,
exactly. You know, and it was just a soup.
And you'd fight over the big chunky parts, and you'd be like, oh, yeah.
But you're so right. I mean, it's just, it's a tragedy if you throw out bones. Like, you know, when you're cutting up some chicken or beef or whatever it is, or lamb, use the bones.
Definitely. The day after a roast, have the carcass, and then, you know, then you can make a decent stock, and then you can put it in your risotto. And yeah,
just adds all that flavor.
Perfect.
And I mean, you can use it as well for the gravy. We're talking so much about gravy.
Yeah, absolutely. Yeah.
To make a good gravy, you need a few bones in there, do you not?
Yeah, exactly. You know, you need the gelatinous of the bones. I find the bone marrow from the inside of the beast as well, depending on what you use. You know, you can use lamb, chicken, you know, beef, you know, venison if you're posh, you know. So, you know, it's just all up to that. But, you know, you get so much more substance out of it. And, you know, you get that nutrition as well. Because, you know, there's only so much nutrition you can get out of the meat itself. But actually in the bones and the marrow itself, it's like nice little boost, you know, for yourself as
Love it. Love it. Comfort food for me, definitely hot chips. I feel like potatoes have to be involved.
They have to be.
In comfort
they
food.
Have to be.
Riyadh, Jane's texted in and said, I thought the honeyman was vegetarian.
Well,
or
actually,
vegan.
Well, I've not had meat for, I think it's about a year now.
Still,
still, honestly.
Well done.
But I'm having some fish. I'm a Presbyterian.
Okay.
I think that's is that angelical or what? I don't know. I don't know what I am.
The
thing is, I don't know what I am.
That's early 90s,
isn't it?
Presbyterian,
yeah.
Whatever.
Just pesky,
yeah.
You come into the restaurant.
I'm a pesky.
I'm a pescatarian.
Yeah. No, no, I want to make clear I'm a Muslim, right? Okay.
What's bone broth if you haven't had meat for a year?
Yeah.
What's bone broth then?
I don't count that as meat. I don't count it as meat.
That's just
if anybody tries to convince me otherwise, it's like, no way will I count that as meat. It's just basically soup. It's gelatinous soup, and I don't care where it comes from. Yeah, and I buy it from Appy Restaurant. It's from Algozi. It's lovely.
Oh, dear. This debate is going to go on in the break, I have a feeling. But we want to know what your comfort food is. Text us on 4001 and on the app. And we're also here. You can call us 0442 31010. Lots more to come on the Thursday brunch. And we're going to be finding out more from Riyadh what he's been up to in Portugal.
This is Dubai Today.
Tweet us now at Dubai I.
Lots of talk in the studio about how to make the perfect bone broth. Should you be making it at home? Is it easy to get? It's so easy to get, guys. Riyadh, I'm pulling you up here.
No problem.
You can make it at home.
I know. And I'm going to from now.
It's so good. Honestly, I just love it. And I let it cook for a good 4 hours.
And there's not going to be any meat on it. So I'm still kind of like, you know, whatever. whatever.
Pescatarian.
Pescatarian.
Flexitarian.
Hangitarian. She's giving you even more space to do your own thing. We love it. Okay, so let us know what your comfort food is. But don't forget, we are giving away a fabulous prize from Pots, Pans and Boards for Tom's Roast. So this is for four people. You can have it. I'm going to let you intro this prize, James, of this special Tom Aiken's special recipe of roast.
So the care that we start off with. So we give three roasts. So we'd give a roasted chicken. And then we give roasted beef, and we have salmon as well. So for our beef, we brine it for 12 hours first, and then air dry it for 6 hours after that. And then we quickly caramelize it in the oven, in a very high oven first, to get the color on the outside, reduce that temperature right down, and then slowly cook it for about 6 hours to a lovely medium rare. But then obviously, if you like your meat well done, we'll do it well done for you as well. But this is how the standard that we do it. And the chicken's the same way. We take the chickens, we air dry it for 6 hours again. So then it gets a nice crispy skin on the outside.
When you air dry it, you just kind of let it hang on. So like an air dryer, kind of.
I take the hair dryer and I blow it on there. So air drying. So we remove it from all the packaging. We dry it down a little bit. Okay, we give it a little bit of seasoning in there. You know, a little bit of the old garlic, rosemary, thyme at the bottom so the aromats can float through it. And then we put it on racks and then we put it in the fridge with no cover. Because obviously most refrigerators are dry cool these days.
Yeah.
And so it sucks some of that moisture from outside of the skin. And then so when you actually go to roast it in the oven, you get a beautiful crispy skin.
Oh, so it's just the moisture from the skin then, yeah, not the meat.
It does take a little bit out of the meat, but obviously we're only leaving it for 6 hours in the fridge because obviously we can't leave it too long in the refrigerator because, you know, we're a food outlet and we can't let it sit too long. But think of it like the old days, like, you know, the back in the days in the butchers when the chickens used to sit there in the counter with very minimal refrigeration and all that air used to just be fresh all over it and the skin would be drier. And so we're trying to recreate that in a clean, healthy environment, but an old-fashioned cooking technique to bring it in a new, modern way.
I must say, my mouth is watering with your descriptions.
That's what you could win today. You want this prize, believe you me. And we've got 6 clues for the mystery ingredient, and we have the first one here.
Guess the ingredient.
Now, Riyadh, I believe you've got our first one.
Okay, so today's mystery ingredient dates back to 500 BC. When it was used as a culinary and medicinal herb. Ancient Greeks used today's mystery ingredient in both funerals and weddings as a symbol of remembrance. Women would wear the mystery ingredient in their wedding crowns to remember the life they led before marriage.
That's your first clue. If you know what it is, text in on 4001 or on the app with your guess and plus your name. Don't forget your name because we need to know who is the winner of the prize. If you've got it right, you will go into the draw for that. Now, Riyadh, coming back to you still, need to ask you where you've been, what you've been up to.
Yeah, so I've kind of, we did a big exhibition in London, which is called Top Draw. Which is amazing, actually, because you kind of meet a lot of the buyers from all over the UK, all the sort of big department stores and stuff. And they loved our honey. They loved our kind of fusions and stuff. And it was amazing. We had a really good response. So we're looking at kind of doing stuff in London, which is really good. And then I went to Portugal. I thought I'd take a little bit of breather. You know, kind of just go to Portugal.
Before you move on to Portugal, I just want to ask you, like, you know, in London, you're doing raw honey. Is that a big thing there? Is there a lot of competition? Or are you bringing something new here?
Well, the thing about it is that you'll get some raw honey that's, but you have to look for it. It's not kind of, it's not everywhere. It's not readily available in, you know, if you just went to a supermarket. I've not kind of seen much, if I'm honest. If I go to sort of the big supermarkets, actually, one of them, one of the supermarkets, the kind of Waitrose, I think I've kind of did some, but they're not doing kind of our kind of varieties. They're not doing some of the exotic varieties. They're not doing some that come from remote places or end of the world, and they're not doing it with fusions and stuff. So we've got kind of an interesting angle in terms of what we do. And obviously, as you know, that we work with, you know, beekeepers that have been doing it for sort of years and centuries, kind of. And we know all our beekeepers by name. So it's, you know, when you're getting something from the supermarket, it's really difficult, kind of. You don't know where it's from. They'll tell you generically where it's from, or that it's a blend of, or it's a mixture of. What we're doing is kind of unique in that sense. And there's not many people doing it. There are some of the local sellers of raw honey, but they don't kind of really promote it heavily as raw honey, which just surprises me. So there is some kind of competition, but that's good. Competition is healthy.
Yeah. So it'll be interesting to see how you fare in London.
Absolutely.
We'll be seeing more of Balkis there.
Yeah.
But moving on to Portugal.
Yeah, you know, so I went really kind of to see a couple of friends of mine over there. Yael and Sally knows her. She were close friends with Yael. She was the original founder of Baker & Spice. And she's an amazing lady, isn't she, Sally?
You would have definitely eaten well in Yale's house.
Absolutely. So she fed me like a king, I'm telling you now. It was and everything is that they kind of cook. And she's married to a chef. And I mean, everything is kind of local ingredients. And she uses sort of raw milk for her coffee. She's got this amazing coffee machine that she's got from Italy. Everything was just amazing. She's got kind of, you know, a woman that has got a farm that has got these amazing eggs that she sells at the market over there, the local market in where she is. And it's amazing. Everything was just kind of top notch. So I kind of went to the north, went to Lisbon, then went the sort of northern areas of Portugal, and it was beautiful. Went around and saw some amazing stuff there, some amazing properties, land. I mean, it was amazing. It's a nice experience just to sort of as a tourist as well. And then I went to kind of met up with Suzanne Radford, who's almost kind of like the queen bee in my hive. She kind of organizes all the, you know, some beekeepers. I went to have a look in the area where in the south, southern sort of part of Portugal, where she is, in a most unbelievable area where she is. She's in Monchique, and it's so kind of sort of mountainous, and it's green, and the air is just amazing. It is kind of, it is a special place. It really is.
It's just, it sounds utterly beautiful. But tell us about the honeys that you tasted there that come from the area, how it relates, how the landscape kind of, you know, brings you the honey and really shapes the flavor.
Well, you know, the thing, they've got so many different varieties, and the amazing thing about it in Portugal, it's kind of really sort of traditional. It's not kind of ridiculously kind of modern and those kind of sort of rural areas, and then you've got kind of beekeepers that have just been doing it for a long, long time, families as well. They're not kind of, it was interesting in terms of the varieties, the different species of trees. You know, like one of the ones that we tasted was an orange blossom, for an example, which we can talk about. There's so many. I tried some bitter ones. I tried bitter honeys. I mean, it was amazing. Sort of fruity ones. They've got carob ones. The eucalyptus. There's so many different varieties, and it really kind of, you're going through this journey of taste profiles. You know, your gob just kind of, it doesn't know where to go because of all these new interesting flavors. Your tongue is all over the place. Yeah. You know. So it is. Yeah. It's kind of wishes quite a scary thought, looking at me with my tongue all over the place, but it was an amazing experience. It was I didn't expect Portugal to be like that. It was a really kind of an amazing experience, in the sense so many different varieties of honeys. The landscape was amazing, and it sort of matched the varieties of honeys that you could get with this amazing just kind of backdrop of you know, trees and fresh air and mountains, and amazing.
Yeah, we were talking about the pollution in the air and how it affects honey earlier, weren't we, off air?
Yeah, we were.
And how important it is that hives are in a remote area.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Yeah, remote area, away from cities. You know, that lovely, you know, sea breezes you get through Portugal as well, and even when you get up into the mountains. And yeah, I think it really reflects, because I love honey. Like, we were talking off air how much I enjoy honey, you know, because coming from Australia, we're quite, you know, lucky. I actually grew up near beehives as well, and I was telling them about a story about how I used to get the honey from Tasmania, from the lavender fields.
Oh, yeah.
And obviously in Tasmania, that it's rural, like, it's, you know, you're away from Australia, you're near the South Pole, and the lavender fields there are, you know, it's purple to the eye can see to the horizon, and they put these bees in there, and this honey is so clean. I mean, like, you can actually just close your eyes and imagine you're in a purple lavender field by eating this honey, and the air is so fresh on your nostrils. But, you know, that's, you know, this is the enjoyment of eating beautiful honey like this honey. You know, and Portuguese honey would be, I reckon, just be up there the same way.
No, absolutely.
I'm just thinking of my Instagram feed with that lavender field.
You better get down to Tasmania.
Definitely.
We're going to come back and talk more about what we should be looking for when we're tasting honeys, the personality types of honeys, and getting into some food news about the latest chef who has given back his Michelin stars. Lots more coming up on the Thursday brunch. A lot of talk about the Michelin stars system and how it works. Christian says, Paul Bocuse kept his three stars continuously for well over 40 years. I don't think there was a misplaced fork during those years. Good to separate myths from reality. I mean, I wonder about that. It's just, it's very difficult. It's a difficult thing. You've worked at Michelin starred restaurants, James. You know the pressure.
Yeah, exactly. And the pressure, the money that goes behind it. Like Tom was saying, every time you get a Michelin star, you have to put your prices up. You're employing two or three extra people, back of house and front of house. You change your cutlery every year. You change your plate every year. You know, you're not talking about a 50 dirham plate here. You're talking about a 500 dirham to 1,000 dirham plate each person. And then the setting of the room. I know the greenhouse in London, I worked at, two Michelin stars. Every year they paint the restaurant. It costs them £1 million every year to redecorate it. This restaurant sits 60 people only.
That's unsustainable, surely. Incredible. Well, it doesn't make sense.
Speaking of sustainable, it's a topic we could just go on and on about. It's so interesting to see how it all works. And I love hearing about these behind the scenes, what you have to do to keep up with the Michelin star system. But I want to come to you, Riyadh. Your new story is one that we all had a look at today, and it just, we couldn't wrap our heads around it.
I know. Can you believe it? So it's lab-made meat, which they're looking at could be the next sort of food revolution. Food sort of evolution, however you want to see it. So there's an author, this is in The Guardian, by the way, the author, Paul Shapiro, he tried the first foie gras made in a lab, and he basically described it as rich, buttery, savory, and very decadent. And so this is kind of in the States, the Hampton Creek Kitchen that was set up in January 2017 with a team of scientists. Basically, they went there and developed this clean foie gras, and they developed it from cell lines of various species. So they'd use actually materials, obviously, for the cells from actual birds. And they would identify the highest quality birds, obviously sort of painlessly, without kind of going any through sort of crazy pain. And they would basically take biopsies and develop this unbelievable sort of lab-made meat from these cells. So and what it is that these kind of startups are kind of are promoting clean meat. And they're also kind of promoting cultured animal products and sort of into the mainstream.
Do you know what's interesting about this story? When I was looking at it, the biologist who is working on it, she's actually vegetarian.
Yeah.
You know, it's religiously vegetarian. And so, you know, to her, it actually means a lot that she's working on this project because she doesn't want to see animals suffer. And I guess that could be an argument. So what she explained it, I mean, so she's taking cell lines, right?
Mm-hmm.
So it's kind of like stem cell work and that kind of thing. So even a feather, a detached feather, so at the root of that, you would have a cell line, which they would then take into a lab and grow into new meat.
But you don't have to use animal cells because have you heard of the Impossible Burger, which is, you know, graining great grounds?
That's plant-based, isn't it?
It's plant-based. So they identified what made meat meaty. It was a heme cell. But heme cells are in other things as well. So they're little nodules on the root of an expired soybean plant. So they identified this and then they grew those and made it. So that's completely plant-based.
Yeah.
You know, I mean, it doesn't appeal to me at all, but I tested this on my vegan daughters and they went, yeah, mum.
Yeah.
Keen.
If you want a kind of plant-based diet, then that is the way forward. Absolutely. Mm. There's no doubt about that.
But it just, you know, it kind of blows my mind a little bit that you're growing meat. It's actually meat. This is, you know, it's one thing to say this is plant-based and it's made to taste like meat and look like meat and that kind of thing. But this is actually growing your own meat.
It's proper meat that's grown in a lab. And
it's real meat.
And the whole thing about it, they're offering that it's a promise of solving these sort of enormous environmental kind of issues, food security, economic challenges that are posed by the growing global population. It's also, that's assuming that they're going to get all the funding and regulatory approvals and the consumer acceptance that's sort of necessary for this market on a sort of global scale.
James?
Yeah, I'm a bit baffled about how they made foie gras. Like, yeah. I'm sorry, like, you know, animal rights and everything. I eat foie gras, yes, okay. But obviously, you're talking about a force-fed bird. A vegetarian is trying to repeat, you know, something like foie gras. You know, why wouldn't they just start with something they could actually, you know, like beef or chicken or, you know, because obviously we do eat too much. You know, our Western diet, we eat way too many... Way too much meat.
Yeah.
Way too much. You know, we don't have enough water. We don't have enough vegetables to feed the cattle either. You know, they have super chicories these days that look like spaceships with all these little birds in a cage and stuff like that. But it's, I don't know where it's going with this. You know, it's something that we need to look at though. We're gonna be starving soon. And I know it sounds weird, you know, me being a chef saying, you know, but this is something we need to really start looking at because people aren't looking after the planet. And, you know, we're just like eating everything, anything we can see, you know, we eat, and you know, it's, we're going to start running out of food soon. But is this our answer? You know, I've actually seen it done in a jar. I watched it on YouTube and stuff like that, and it's quite interesting actually. But it's just a bit like, am I going to have a job soon? You know, am I going to have a lab coat? You know, all chefs are going to be like, you know,
scientists.
Top scientists, you know, a doctorism at, you know, at the age
of
28.
But you're going to get the actual kind of product as it is. You're going to get kind of like, you know, the sort of chicken breast or the...
Is it going to perform the same ways that we're used to? Because, you know, we're very stuck in our ways. You know, we're very old-fashioned. You know, humans don't really
probably
change
taste-wise. Probably taste-wise, they might nail the taste side of it, but you're not going to get it with a big fat bun sticking in the middle of it.
We're not going to make nice gravy at the end of it.
I agree that we're in an unsustainable meat-producing place, but we can't cut out animals completely either. No. There's studies that we have to give back to the soil, and within where we used to be 30 years ago, where it was more sustainable. It's essential. I think this is an amazing debate, actually.
Maybe it's all about the balance. We need to get to it. Would love to know what you think on that topic and more of what we're discussing today. But the next mystery ingredient clue,
guess the ingredient,
is coming from Riyadh.
Okay, so the name of today's mystery ingredient originates from the Latin meaning dew of the sea.
Oh, you said that.
That's
lovely.
It. Oh, that's
thanks.
It.
Yeah, short, I said it really well, didn't I?
Short and sweet. Chef James, your turn to really just take over. You've handed us all our dishes. What have we served up now?
Okay, so I thought I might start with a little bit of breakfast. Yeah. So the restaurant that I work in, we are known for our breakfast. We've won, you know, best breakfast in the BBC Food Awards. So I thought I might bring some along. So. I actually said something really terrible. You don't make friends with salad. Well, you can actually make friends with avocado, yeah? Because everybody loves an avocado. Everyone loves guacamole. Everybody has their own special recipe. I like mine spicy. I don't like mine spicy. I put tomato. I put onion in mine. But it's still a love of the avocado. Mm. So what we brought in today is, so we've got grilled sourdough on a cold burning oven. It's about 350 degrees. And then we have our guacamole at the bottom, or our crushed avocado, depending on the way you want to say it. And then on top, we just brought some like air-dried cecina. So that's an air-dried beef from Spain. But, you know, with the avocado, you can have the cecina, or you don't have to have the cecina. You can have the eggs on top, or you can just have the avocado on toast. But this is what I brought in for all of us to try, and I'd like to see what you guys think about it. Yeah,
you know what? Yeah. It's hearty. There's, you know, it's you could have one piece of sourdough bread with the avocado and the cecina on top, and you're set. Actually, that's a good breakfast right there, Sally.
I was going to ask you, could I have a poached egg on the top of this? It is delicious. Really, really delicious.
The spec I got is we've only got a microwave.
Absolutely.
Here, so sorry.
No, but it's a really good combination. The bread is superb, and that I'm a bread snob. And what's in the avocado?
In the avocado itself. So we actually put a brimoire of French shallots in there as well, and we put tomato concasse. So we obviously peel our tomatoes first and then dice them up into small cubes without the seeds, so it doesn't get too wet. And we use a mixture of lime juice and lemon juice in there, so you get the lime juice flavor, but you get the acidity of the lemon juice as well. And then just simple salt and pepper in there.
It's not overpowering the avocado taste, though. It's subtle. It's nice. Really.
And we
good.
put a nice good quality olive oil in there as well, just to give that little bit of a, you know, emulsification when you mix it all together.
So the velvetiness,
the shine
that brings it together. Yeah, I like the freshness of the lime and the lemon. Mm. It's good. Beautiful. Riyadh, you've put honey on yours already.
Yeah,
we can't trust you with this.
Well, you know the thing, I didn't want to eat the meat on top of it, so I put some of my orange grove honey, which is a mixture of like mandarin. Also, it's got some just an orange, and it's got some clementine. And we kind of fuse that for like about 2 days, and then we just kind of take away the zest, and you're just left with this beautiful infusion of orange honey. So I poured some of that on that lovely bread and avocado mix that is done, and you know what, it's beautiful. It really is nice. It's delicious. So that's my kind of like sort of vegetarian Presbyterian version of it.
Pescatarian. We're going to get
that's
there.
The one. That's the one.
That one. The pesky one.
Yeah,
that's
pesky.
You.
Yeah.
Mm. But I just, I don't think I've ever had honey and avocado together before.
It's lovely. Try it, honestly. Okay. Honest to God, I'm going to get you some now. Okay. He'll get you some now. He's got
You're
some more
come
bread.
Round.
That bread is lovely, by the way. Is that kind of, do you bake that yourself?
Yeah, so we have a baker in house, and we make all our own sourdough as well. So, you know, obviously that's the perk of working there. It's such an amazing place. You know, we make everything in house.
Yeah.
So, you know, know, we have our baker, we have our mother dough, so that's what you call the fermentation part. Yeah. And yeah, we make our own fresh bread. You know, it takes 2 days to make sourdough. People didn't know that. And, you know, from start to finish, it actually takes 2 days from the actual mixing part to actually the baking part and giving it to the customer. And then the fermentation you usually keep for a week anyway, so they get a good flavor on there. So, you know, lots of heart and soul going into that one piece of bread, but even before you put the avocado on top of it.
It's just beautiful. I love a good sourdough, and this is definitely some very, very good sourdough. But it, like you said, you've won, the restaurant has won for breakfast. What makes a really fantastic breakfast?
I think just the freshness and, you know, the passion you put into it. Like, avocado is such a hearty vegetable. Do we call it a vegetable or a fruit these days?
I think it's a fruit.
Sure. Yeah. I never really keep up with it. It's like that tomato thing, you know. So we'll just call it avocado. But, you know, it's fresh every day. Otherwise, it goes brown, you know. So we make that fresh every day. We poach the eggs fresh every day. You know, the sausages are cooked. You know, it's not like, I'm sorry to say this, it's not like buffet style at your local hotel where it's just put into a big auto sham and you dig in. You know, we put care into it. You know, the field mushrooms are roasted every day. It's that little touch, as I said, about working in Michelin, obviously myself, and I'm bringing that to the masses. You know, we feed for breakfast over 350 customers for breakfast, you know, a la carte. So when you order something, it's cooked fresh for you. It's not sitting in a big chauffeur tray and you spoon it out yourself, you know. So this is the love that we put into it, and the marinades and, you know, the herbs that go into it. So this is what makes us, you know, an award-winning breakfast place. And, you know, we're very, obviously, kid-friendly as well. You know, we have lots of children.
That is very important.
So, yeah.
Because it is about, you know, sharing. It's about family and friends.
Yeah.
You can't leave the kids out.
Absolutely.
Of that experience. And to get them to taste, you know, really good quality food and to understand what that is like and to appreciate it.
Well, that's the thing. The customers understand. It's not from a can. It's not from a bag. They see us, big open kitchen. They see the piles of vegetables the boys and the girls cutting up all day.
It feels like a home kitchen, your place.
Well, that's
pots,
what it's,
pans and boards.
Well, that's the whole thing. It's
I
supposed
love it.
To be homely. You know, you come in there, you drop the kids off, you let them run around in the playpen, you have yourself a lovely breakfast, you get some fresh juices.
What are your pancakes like then, James?
Oh, my, we were talking about this before. Pancakes.
Tell us about your pancakes.
I tell you what, Tom Aiken's pancakes, they're in all of his restaurants, and I was lucky enough to eat them in London to start with, yeah? They are a good inch thick, cooked in a frying pan, a deep frying pan. So usually you cook fry pancakes on a plancha or in a pan, like a couple at a time. No, it gets an individual frying pan each. Blueberries inside, rises up about an inch thick, takes about 20 minutes to cook one.
What's the secret to getting a really fluffy pancake that rises up like that?
Trade secret, that one.
It does sound a bit like your
probably
Yorkshire
butter.
Pudding.
Yeah.
No one's listening, James.
Yeah, I know. So it's about the batter. It's all about having a nice thick batter and getting your ratio of bicarbonated soda and baking powder in there, because you can't put too much, otherwise it takes too much tanginess in there.
Is it with buttermilk?
A bit of buttermilk, but obviously buttermilk is quite expensive here, so you can use a different. We use buttermilk, but if people want to use it at home, Labanais is very good.
Yeah.
So I use that at my house, but obviously for the restaurant, we look at more expensive products for it. But yeah, you know, when I make them at home for when I have guests over and my mum and dad over and stuff, I would actually use like Labanais for it, because it gives that nice tanginess to it as well. But it's just about, you know, the attention and the care and looking at it and making sure your batter is nice and thick.
And talk to me about Eggs Benedict.
Eggs Benedict. Oh, yeah, okay. So Eggs Benedict. So we make the muffins in-house as well.
Okay.
So we make our own English muffins. So they're, you know, they're not always perfect. And that's the way food's supposed to be. Some are a little bit like on a tilt, some are a little bit on their angle. But, you know, it's still got the love and attention, each muffin. And then we have our veal ham on top of it. So we shave that very thinly and then we warm that up carefully. And then we slow cook our eggs. So we slow cook our eggs at 62.5 degrees for 15 minutes first. And then we crack it into hot water.
What's the difference? Why do you need to slow cook eggs?
And then
for 15 minutes?
No, 50.
50?
50 minutes,
yeah. Because our customers compliment on us, how do you get your eggs perfectly shaped and runny in the middle? Our eggs don't look like UFOs. They don't look like dragon tears. They're eggs. So when that sits on your muffin with your... Sorry, did you say egg? You said Benedict, didn't you? So
yes.
With your ham, yeah? So I was going on a Royale then. you get your ham, and then you have two eggs that are perfectly egg-shaped. And then the hollandaise over the top, which is, you know, a beautiful emulsification of butter, eggs, egg yolk, and vinegars.
Just, I think,
going for breakfast there.
Well, I always order Eggs Benedict because it's not something I would ever cook at home. You know, I can poached eggs on toast, avocado on toast, yes, but not Eggs Benedict.
Yeah, agreed.
But it really is about the eggs. Are they free range?
Yes, of course.
Excellent.
Yes, of course.
But it's
like I was saying about comfort food. You know, I've had good eggs Benedict. I've had good eggs, but what makes it is the hollandaise. It's the sauce that finishes it.
Yeah.
Because when you go to a breakfast place and then you get really bad hollandaise, you remember that hollandaise.
You'll never go back.
It has to be thick. You know, you poke your finger across it and it leaves a mark. That's the whole point.
Oh, I love it. More text coming in about comfort food. Dale says my go-to food has to definitely be a Sunday roast lamb. Absolutely love cooking this and get a huge buzz watching my family enjoy it. And that's the thing about comfort food as well, that everyone gets to sit around and enjoy it together, and it's part of that experience of enjoying beautiful comfort food. Somebody else has texted in and said, you can poach an egg in the microwave. My mother-in-law showed me how to do it.
So hold on a minute. Sally's just having a fit. And
tragedy.
She's fell on the floor. We need to kind of like revive her. She's suffocating. Hold on a minute. She's foaming now.
No comment.
Oh, dear. We're just going to leave it there, I think. We need another clue now.
With mother-in-laws.
Next clue for Guess the Ingredient is with you, Sally. Have you collected yourself yet?
Yes, my mother-in-law does that as well. But anyway, today's mystery ingredient is a woody herb with a slightly piney and tea-like aroma. It has slightly minty, sage-like, peppery, balsamic taste with a bitter, woody aftertaste. Its flavour does not diminish in cooking, so it can be added at the beginning or cooked in stews.
So we're talking comfort food today. James has got plenty of that coming from pots, pans and boards. But we want to know your favourites. What do you love? What is your favourite comfort food that you always go to? It could be something simple. Something's just arrived at my desk. I believe I've got to dig in. It could be something as simple as hot chips. Coming from Australia, James, I'm going to ask you about this, so you may want to sit down for a sec.
Coming.
You're a very busy man. But my favourite thing, and I say this to every Aussie that I see, is hot chips with chicken salt.
Yeah, that reminds me of going to school.
Yes.
And gravy on top as well.
But are you a lover of chicken salt? Can you back me up on this, or are you like, no, not really?
Do you know, I don't mind MSG, yeah.
Because yeah.
Full of it.
I can't believe you're saying that. That's poison.
There's something I love, and it's called Japanese mayonnaise. You'll find it in every single sushi you eat. You read the back of the bottle. The reason why that mayonnaise tastes amazing, because it's got MSG in it, yeah? Mm. And there's MSG in all of our foods now, and a lot of people don't even know what it's called these days.
Yeah.
So, but chicken salt, yeah, I don't mind. You know what I mean?
Know.
I don't eat it every day.
Exactly.
You know, I don't, like, literally have a kilo of it, because there was another news article I was going to bring in about how much Australian men eat twice the amount of salt as the rest of the world.
Really?
And that's trending at the moment.
Gosh.
But I didn't actually bring that one in, because I thought something else brought another article in. But it's funny you say that, because chicken salt is probably one of those things, because when I went to school every day we'd stop off the chippy and literally it'd be like, can I get a dollar worth of chips and extra chicken salt on top, please?
Extra chicken salt. That
and then
is
you'd be,
my kind
and then
of thing.
You'd be poking at the bottom of the bag with your finger like a pack of Doritos to get the last drop of salt.
Yes.
Wow.
You understand. I always
Amen,
tell
sister.
People about this, and they they look at me like I'm completely mad and they don't know what it tastes like, because anyone who lives outside of Australia actually doesn't know what chicken salt is.
Yeah.
Or what it tastes like. Well, how would you describe the taste?
Okay, so take your Maggi stock cube, blend it up.
Not quite.
Take one of those,
down.
Blend it up with about 500 grams of salt, and I reckon you're about there.
I beg to differ. It just has a unique taste. It's not, doesn't taste like chicken. It doesn't, it has like this sweet, salty thing going on and probably a lot of MSG, but it does something that I just cannot, yeah. That's my favourite. Tell me yours. Now, Riyadh and Sally, you guys are very busy with your beef cheeks and truffle polenta. I want to get your thoughts.
Definitely comfort food, isn't it? I mean, a stewy, for me, stew is probably...
Take us through this dish, Chef James.
Okay, so...
Sorry, you're just taking a bite.
I'm just enjoying it as well. I love it. What's that? So, yeah, like I said, Sally, it is a stew. You know, it's traditionally beef cheeks is a stew, lots of vegetables. You know, you put your stock or your water in there, and you boil it for ages, then you eat it with your bread and your potatoes and stuff. But what we've done here, we refined it a little bit more. So we salt our beef cheeks first, and then we sear them, and then we put them into a modern contraption. So we sous vide them. So we put them in a vacuum bag with a little bit of stock, some aromats, and then we cook them at a precise temperature of 75 degrees for about 8 to 10 hours. So there's no more boiling. You keep all the gelatinous like flavor of the beef cheek in there as well, and you don't lose anything within your sauce. And then from there, we're serving it with soft polenta. So I believe that polenta, I love polenta, I hate dry polenta. Polenta should be wet and runny, and it should be silky smooth on your tongue. You know, we finish it off with a good quality truffle paste, which you guys have the recipe as well for it, and a little bit of Parmesan cheese.
All of this is going to be on our Dubai Today blog page on DubaiEye1038.com. So make sure you head over there. You'll see these fantastic recipes. Riyadh.
You know what? I've just kind of broke my thingy meat thing. Cause
no.
I've just, let me tell you now, I was looking at it and it was like looking at me and we just met and our eyes clicked like, wow. And like, I've just tried the beef cheek with this beautiful polenta. I can hardly talk because it was just, I feel like I'm kind of like...
It's okay, we've got a couple more packets back there.
It just melts in your mouth.
Absolutely beautiful. I mean, it literally melts in your mouth. I've never tasted a kind of meat that's just literally, you bite through it and you don't even know that you're biting through it. It's like a sack of cloud that's kind of enrobed in this kind of beef that's poured with this beautiful rich gravy, with this beautiful little wobbly polenta that's wobbling all over the place, that's rich and creamy.
It's so
delicious.
See, he's talking while I'm actually eating it.
Yeah.
And it is, it's the richness, it's this richness of the flavours that you're getting from me. You're getting this kind of crazy, meaty, delicious, intense gravy. You're getting this beautiful kind of... you know, just a fluffy polenta that's kind of almost kind of creamy, like, you
it
know
is
what I mean?
Very creamy. Which offsets the deep flavors of the beef, of the gravy, because you do need that lightness in there, but you've still got the earthy truffle in there. The notes are still there as well.
Yeah, it's not supposed to be overpowering. You know, that's something I find a lot of people do here. Truffle, they, you know, you see truffle on the menu, they put like half a litre of truffle oil on top of your food, and then you're like, where's the rest of it? All I can smell and taste is truffle. Yeah. It's an enhancer.
And that's all it is here. Yeah. This one, that's all it is.
It's delicate. It's supposed to be, you know, you're talking about something that costs 15,000 dirhams a kilo. A kilo truffle is, yeah? So you cheated with respect. You know, it's supposed to make your meal better. It's not supposed to overtake your food.
Yeah, when you said truffle oil, and I said, I don't like truffle oil, because I don't. Because I can smell it in a kitchen often, and it overpowers absolutely everything.
It has a fuely smell to it as well,
totally
like a little
horrible.
Bit of petrol to it.
Horrible. But you can see, if this was a plate,
Sally,
and I was taking it back to the kitchen, I would have licked it.
Yeah,
I could hear you scraping through it.
That's compliments to the chef. Thank you.
I'm going to be doing the same thing in the break. I can't do it while I'm talking on it.
It is honestly
beautiful.
Amazing.
It's beautiful.
You have to experience this because it's difficult to be so kind of vivid in terms of the description. Mm. You have to kind of experience it because it is just... It's a beauty.
We did.
You've sent Maureen into a tizzy, I think. Keep talking, honey man, she says. She was just,
So this is on our menu. This is. And, you know, I thought I might bring in some of our, like, gems, you know, some of our diamonds. And, you know, this is definitely one of those dishes that speak out for the brand and for, like, what we do. And, you know, we take care, you know, like, most people, you know, they turn their nose up at polenta. And when they say to me, I don't want polenta, can I have french fries? I always send them a pot of this polenta on the side.
Oh, yeah.
And then they end up eating the whole thing.
Oh,
it's just, you know what? It's deceptively simple. When you look at it, there's just, you know, the beef and there's the polenta, but the, oh my goodness, the flavours in your mouth.
That's the epitome of comfort food.
Yeah,
yeah.
Absolutely.
It really
is. So,
that
yeah.
is.
Absolutely.
Totally. You could have a big bowl full of that and then not feel guilty. Mm-hmm. Well, you will a little bit later.
We need to crack on.
Sorry.
We've got another mystery ingredient clue that we need to give out. The
Guess
next
the
one.
Ingredient.
Yeah, Riyadh, have you got the next one?
Okay, yeah. So researchers believe that today's mystery ingredient is a powerful tool in increasing memory, which I need, to be honest with you. It has pain-relieving antioxidants and can help ease arthritic pain. You can use the mystery ingredient in a tea or consume it with your food, which will aid digestion of starchy or rich foods, which we need right now, actually.
Mm.
However, the distilled oil from the today's mystery ingredient can be poisonous in strong doses.
Oh, there you go. Oh, dear, it's all happening here. If you are on the Dubai Eye Facebook page, you will see video of everything that's going on here. Chef James McDonald, who is head chef at Pots, Pans and Boards, he's been incredibly busy here in the studio serving up dessert, banoffee mousse pot. I'm just loving these. They are absolutely gorgeous. And Sally's crunching away there as we can hear. Riyadh is diving in as well. Chef James, you're going to have to talk us through dessert now. We were just talking off air just about how you get... let's go back to the beef cheeks, sorry, for a second.
Okay.
Because we can't stop thinking about it, quite frankly. But Riyadh, you were asking, James, how they get the polenta so fluffy.
So how we get the polenta so fluffy, so fluffy polenta. So most polenta is a 1/4 ratio. So you use about 400 mils of liquid to 100 grams of polenta. So you bring your polenta to the boil, and we use chicken stock for ours because we want that nice flavour to go through it as well. But you can use water. You can use a little bit of milk in there as well if you'd like. But we whisk in the polenta. Add like a little teaspoon of butter to it, not too much butter, that's it, and then we keep working it, whisking it and whisking. It's about working the polenta, and then you'll actually start breaking the granules down. I'm only talking about Insta polenta here. Yeah. So you keep whipping it and whipping and whipping, and about 6 minutes later, it's a bit of a workout. It is strong, but you get that texture, and then you look at it by eye, and then if it needs a little bit more liquid, you add a little bit more stock or water or milk to it. I don't use cream because it just turns really fatty.
And
you can actually just start tasting the cream
in there.
You
lose the lightness.
Yeah, exactly.
And that's what I've kind of been eating a couple of restaurants that I've been, if I'm honest. And you know what? It's so kind of like heavy, creamy and buttery to a point where it's literally, when they serve it, it comes in kind of, there's an oil, it's swimming in
it
oil. But this, what I've had today is just amazing. So it really is.
Obviously, in a restaurant situation, we have it ready to go, but then we finish it. So we finish the polenta, so we cook it in the stock ready to go, but it's a base now. And then every time you order it, we take one portion out, we give it a good whipping, and then, you know, we work it, and then that's what it's given to. So, you know, this is how, you know,
it's light as air.
And I love polenta because 6 minutes you can have a meal. And this dish, like I was saying, with the beef cheeks, you've got a crock pot at home. I was telling Sally about it. You put a timer on there.
You're gonna get a slow cooker.
You get a slow cooker. You go out for the day, you see your beef cheeks, you put it in the crock pot, okay? You set a 6 hour timer for it, a 2 hour delay, you come home 10 hours later, you got boom, beef cheeks, casserole, lamb. You just, you know, take your...
What herbs are you using to put in the slow cooker with the cheeks?
With these cheeks, I stay very traditional to, like, my French culinary background, so I use rosemary, thyme, and bay leaf. But then, you know, when I want to jazz it up, I like a good Creole spice in there. Maybe a couple of chilies in there as well, depending on your flavour as well. But, you know, this is what I... For these beef cheeks, what we're using is a very traditional, like, French style, like, cooking for this one. And then, yeah, you get home and polenta, it's literally 6 minutes, bring it to the boil, whip it in there, it's faster than rice.
That's amazing. Yeah,
that's fantastic. It really is, which is why we can't stop talking about it. Hello to you, Shahzeen. Hello, namaste, bonjour, hola and salam alaikum from the School Run Club. Good to hear from you. But Shahzeen, the mystery ingredient is not cumin, so I'm just going to give you that clue. Get it in there. It is in Chef James's dishes, and he's just mentioned it just now. Just kind of putting that out there. But we're getting on to dessert now. James, and you've brought us a banoffee mousse pot.
Yeah.
Not your usual banoffee pie, and I love banoffee pie, but this is something else.
So do I. I love banoffee pie, and we were talking yesterday about this, Sally, about, you know, deconstructing, you know, classic dishes and reconstructing it, and, you know, just putting that twist on it. And, you know, I'm so lucky with, like, the experiences I've had working in some of the kitchens that I've had, and I've worked with some amazing chefs, and, you know, this is some of the stuff you come up with these days, you know. It's so simple. You've got crumble, which represents the pastry on the outside. You've got your, you know, you've got your caramel. So this is a caramelized condensed milk, or creme de leche, as they call it as well. You know, we just got simple bananas chopped up through it as well. And then we have a chantilly cream, a sour chantilly cream though. Mm. So instead of just doing whipped cream, we whip it with sour cream or creme fraiche if you have that, but a good quality one because you need that fat consistency in there so it whips nice and thick. And then it kind of like balances it all because you've got something very sweet, you've got something very crispy, you've got something a little bit sour, and then you've got your soft bananas in there as well.
You need that sourness for me.
Yeah.
Because I haven't got an extremely sweet tooth and it's just what lifts it.
Yeah, wow. I know what you mean, yeah.
That's got to be the crunchiest crumble I have ever had. Mm. It's like earth shattering.
I've got to say, like, I've searched the globe for crumble recipes, yeah? And
what's the secret? How do you get it like this?
It's really buttery.
It was the simplest one.
I've never tasted anything like this crumble ever.
Right, no. Exactly.
This is the first.
You're going to, literally, you're going to hold on this the rest of your life. And, you know, I'm happy to share it with people because it's like I say, I gave you the recipe for this crumble recipe and it's so simple. It's equal parts flour, butter, sugar. You whip your butter and sugar together and then you spoon in your soft flour, so like T45 flour, if you're chefs out there. And you spoon in the flour one by one without overworking it. And then as soon as it's just mixed, you take it out, you put it into a tray, and then you put it into a low oven at about 165 degrees. And then you slowly bake it. And then you got to keep chopping it up as you go because, you know, it's got to caramelize and brown all at the same time. And then it'll look like it splits at one stage, but then it'll all suck back up into the actual dough itself. And then when it's golden brown, as like you guys are seeing, it's actually, that's the sugar caramelizing. So it's actually caramelized sugar, and that's how come you get that really big crunch you can probably hear in the background, guys, because I've got it in my microphone right now. And it is, like, literally, it's teeth breaking. So that's why you got to break it down. You know, you put it in a bag and you smash it up with a rolling pin at the end, but you'll never have a complaint that you got soggy crumble.
Never again.
Never. I mean, it is. It's just absolutely delicious.
Mm.
The way they kind of merge together, that kind of crazy crunch, almost kind of like you can damage your bones, your jawbone. And like, you know, it's not for the faint hearted.
It's a bit of a workout, yeah.
It's a workout, but you know what? It's worth every little bang and crush that you're doing in your gob.
Mm.
But it's just delicious.
Could you use different sugars?
Pardon?
Could you use different sugars?
No, not really. I find caster sugar. You have to use a caster sugar because it's a fine sugar as well and because of the burning temperature of it. If you wanted to use like a Demerara sugar, the burning temperature of that is a lot lower, so you wouldn't get the same effect, the caramelization, and light brown sugars and your dark brown sugars and then your gold sugars as well. You just don't get that same effect. You can experiment for flavor-wise. You know, you can do that.
Yeah.
But as I find when you're doing the creaming part as well, so when you're mixing your, say if you're using Demerara sugar, for instance, because a lot of people like it. I love Demerara sugar in my cooking, but you don't.
Just looking at Riyadh, sorry.
It doesn't break down in the butter enough. And then you wait, and then you're waiting and waiting, unless you blend it first, and then you could add to it. But then it's just up to the individual. You can play around it. You know, that's the beauty of cooking. I find cooking is very selfish. You're making things that you love.
So, I'm just holding on to this kind of, like glass jar, like my life depended on it. And while I'm just shoving it all and scooping it all up in my mouth.
You've already lost your peskiness.
I'm gone.
I'm not sure what else we're going to be losing.
I've lost everything else here. I can't believe it.
Yeah. It's just,
You haven't put any honey in that one then?
No.
No need.
This is not about the honey. Not now.
But, I mean, desserts definitely right up there for comfort food. Banoffee pie, the sticky puddings.
Oh, the classic chocolate ice cream.
The classic chocolate ice cream has got to be one. The custard pie, looking at you,
well,
Sally.
Well, no, custard tart. But for me, it's custard on something. So really nice apple pie, just simple. I like simple comfort food, but custard on it. Or rhubarb crumble. With custard, classic.
When I was in Portugal, I had the, you know, the nata?
Mm.
The and that is the beautiful
the
sort
Portuguese
of,
pie.
The Portuguese, yeah, tart.
Custard pie, yeah.
Custard pie. Custard tart. It was
Did you get to the shop in Lisbon?
I did. You know, the one that they use the butter?
Yeah. And they sell it to the royal family.
Yeah.
It's amazing. I waited 2 hours in line for that.
Yeah.
And it was worth every single two hours.
I went early and I was there literally in 2 minutes, which is amazing. And I literally had four within... 3 minutes. I had four.
They're small. They fit in the palm of your hand. And you have one in each one, and you're just like, hum, hum. Quickly, someone reload me. Someone reload me.
What's
the name of the shop for those of us who haven't been yet?
I don't know. It's on the outskirts.
Oh, Sally, you've got to do it.
There's only one, okay? So I don't know the name of it, but it's just on the outskirts of Lisbon. Easily catch a train out there because that's what I did. And it's the only one that sells to the royal family, and the recipe is over I don't know how long they say it was.
Oh,
like,
it's generations.
Generations and generations. The recipe has never been changed.
And they use butter. The thing is, a lot of them, kind of probably about 90% of them in Portugal, they use margarine, which, you know, which is, ain't that nice.
It's not the same.
It's not the same, but this kind of the butter one is just amazing.
The famous pastry shop of Belém. Is that what it's called? Belém.
Belém.
Belém it is, yeah.
Yeah.
Sorry. You can find
James is nodding because he's crunching his crumble.
You can find
Pastiers de Belém. That sounds amazing. Oh, I think we need to get down there. Joe has just found it for us. And that
Thank
is
you,
the
Joe.
One in Belém.
I've got some pictures on my honeyexplorer.com on my blog. You can you'll see that beautiful kind of little custard tart that's split in half, and you see that juicy little kind of custard in there. It's amazing.
The way it's baked, the way just everything that James is reminiscing back to the days.
It's like a food fantasy right now again.
Yeah, you brought some for us then. Yeah. You brought some with you, you know.
Where is it?
They don't last long.
They don't, exactly. They didn't last 4 minutes with me.
They don't travel well.
Back all the way from Lisbon to Dubai.
Oh, no. We've got to get to the last clue in our Guess the Ingredient competition.
Guess the ingredient.
Sally, you've got it.
Today's mystery ingredient adds aromatic magic to Moroccan tagines and a fragrant twist to fish and meat recipes or even chocolate brownies. Today's mystery ingredient is found in Chef James' beef cheeks and truffle polenta dish at Pots, Pans and Boards.
Lots of talk in the studio about how to properly cook. We're still talking about the beef. Yes, we are still on the beef. Trying
beef
to figure
and slow
out.
Cookers.
Yeah, yeah. And slow cookers and how to get that gorgeous, tender beef in a stew. And James, you were saying it's really, actually, it's not the fault of your cooking technique if it doesn't turn out. It's actually in the cut of meat.
Yeah, exactly. We were just talking about it with Joe, you know, and I've had the same problems. You know, you go to the butchers or you go to your local supermarket these days and you buy this diced beef. Yeah, everyone thinks nothing of it. It's just too lean. Okay, you know, you're braising dishes, you know, those things that we're talking about, the comfort food, the gelatinous, the jelly,
that's, and you could feel that in your dish,
that's something that coats your mouth. You know, it's not fat, it's actually just pure proteins in there. And this is something that we can't get these days because we are so self-conscious about lean meat. Lean meat. And you know, how many times have you made a meal and then you go, I'm not going to cook that again because it's dry? It's not because of your cooking. It's because of the cuts of meat that we're getting these days.
You've got to have the good marbling in there, don't you?
Nice marbling. But then, obviously, the whole point of slow cooking, of braising, is to break down the sinew and the cartilage, whatever you're doing. It's the sinew that holds the muscles together, which you're actually trying to break down, that actually turns to jelly, and that makes that delectable stickiness that we're all talking about, that, you know, on your lips, and you're like, mmm. So this is what you're after. Mm. But, you know, when you have lean meat, you know, when you're actually getting it from like your local supermarket and where they don't know what to do with the leg meat, which is a lovely piece of meat you could usually use, and they're just cutting it up, cleaning all the fat and the sinew off it, and so yes, you're buying 100% meat, but yes, you're missing out, you're getting all that dryness, and then, you know, it puts you off cooking again, and it, you know, it scares you to go, oh, I don't want to do that again, because obviously you think you failed, but it's not, it's because of your local supermarket or wherever you're buying your meat has failed you, hasn't given you the right cut of meat.
Actually, talking about oxtail earlier, that's a good cut for that, isn't
yes
it?
Very much so. Oxtail is, I do a lot of cooking with oxtail.
Okay.
It's a bit of a taboo thing in the UAE. So it's obviously in restaurants it doesn't sell too well, but personally I buy it.
But for even lamb, if you're talking about lamb, you've got to get the right cut. If you're making a roast, it's better to go with a shoulder rather than a leg.
It depends on how long you're cooking and what your cooking method is, you know. I love a good leg of lamb. Do you know what I mean? In Australia,
yes.
You know what I mean. Yeah? Is Tom Cruise coming around tonight? No, I'm cooking a lamb. If you're doing a shoulder, I did a shoulder for my mum's birthday. Actually, I did about 12 for her 50th birthday when I went back there, and I slow roasted them for 12 hours. And I smoked them and slow roasted them. And I used a shoulder because I wanted that melting sinew to go through all the meat, yeah? My family thought it was Christmas on my mum's birthday. But it's, you know, but then if I'm doing a quick roast, I would opt for the leg of lamb, yeah, because then I can just bang it in and have it done in an hour and a half or 2 hours.
And you were saying about slow cooking, a slow roast in a slow cooker. Tell me about that.
Okay, so I've got a crock pot at home. I really promote crock pots because I live a very busy lifestyle. I'm a chef. I'm hardly at home. I have a lot of friends. I rode motorbikes, blah, blah, blah. So what I'm starting to do now as an experiment is actually using my slow cooker, my crock pot, as a roasting device. So I would put vegetables on the bottom of it, I'd set it at a low temperature, and then I'd rest my meat on top of it and then put the lid on top of it. So it sort of semi-steams it at the beginning. So all those aromats, so the meat juices would drop to the bottom, hit the vegetables, aromats will go up through the meat, and then from there, all I have to do is after about 6 hours, and when I get home, because I got it all on a time system, and I went to the local hardware store, bought a timer so I could turn off and on, because, you know, meat rests anyway. And with health regulations, you can have meat cooked out of the fridge for 6 hours. Okay, so it's safe.
Yeah.
So you can actually cook your meat, let it sit for 2 hours, you get home, and then all you need to do is finish it. So you can either turn on your oven very high, or you can finish it off in a pan to get the golden roast on the outside, but you still have that delectable soft. You can take the back of a spoon and push it down through your roast.
That's what you want.
And,
that's,
you know, exactly this is what I'm starting to experiment at home with, because I don't like using the oven because it's gas, and I don't like leaving the house with the gas on.
Of course.
And then I don't like leaving the house with the oven on either. But, you know, we all go, you know, we all, I don't know, I have an electric toothbrush, so I leave my electric toothbrush plugged in. And this thing actually doesn't heat up above 80 degrees. It depends, because I set it at a low temperature. So I feel safer leaving my house knowing that this appliance is on and knowing I'm going to come home to a lovely meal.
If we could just keep getting all of your most amazing tricks for cooking in the kitchen. You're just full of all of the best advice, James. But before I let you go, I need to ask you about
the latest food news.
I beg your pardon. That should be a fantasy there.
Food fantasy.
So now that we've finally got the right sweeper in, what is your food fantasy, James?
What is my food fantasy at the moment? Well, I've been working lots these days, and I haven't really had much time for myself. And, you know, it's not really like a fantasy. It's a journey I'd like to take you on. It's a journey I've been on before, and I've been closing my eyes and thinking about it. So I was very lucky I got to work in St. Lucia, the Caribbean, one of the most beautiful places in the world. I mean, it's like, for a food fantasy and for someone that loves food, I love my job, but I love food in general. And we were talking about the slow movement of vegetables being cooked under the sun and slow, highly volcanic soil. And, you know, my fantasy is to get back there for my holiday very shortly. I close my eyes and I can see myself walking through a lush tropical rainforest, which I was doing along the road, yeah. And then all next to me was where the tomatoes would fall off the truck, reseed, and then you'd pick the tomatoes up and eat them. And I mean, everyone says, like, my grandma grows the best tomatoes. I've got a few Italian friends there. And literally, these tomatoes that I eat on the side of the road, which anybody can eat, is the mangoes, the papayas, the cocoa plants, obviously a chocolate restaurant as well I've had before, vanilla everywhere. But, you know, the cuisine and eating there was just so uplifting, with clean air, and, you know, just produce is so, I don't know, seasonal, but it's all one season. It's the tropics. So, like, you have all those exotic fruits always at all times next to you. And I had some of the best meals there, which were so simple. You know, there was a dish there they called, it's called potfish. So it's done it very, very spicy. Yeah. So I like jalapenos. Yeah, I love jalapeno, depending on how you want to pronounce it. But I love spicy food. So I would go to this woman, and she was a very, very big lady. Yeah. I didn't really understand her because, you know, her Lucian is very thick. Yeah. Quack, 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 quack. And I would be like, yeah, pot fish, please. So every day I used to get this dish from her, and it was very simple. It was rice, but it was this gravy on the comfort food we're talking about here. But the fish would be different every single day. And I'll be like, I said to her, I spoke to her husband. I was like, how come the fish is different? She's like, it depends what we pull out of the ocean in the morning, my friend. And I'm just like, wow. Like, I wish I could run my restaurant like that.
Incredible.
And, you know, it is such a food fantasy to have. Like, obviously, I work for such a big restaurant. And, you know, if I could just get back to basics and just have, like, someone come to my door and just drop a bunch of random stuff off and then tell my customers a bunch of, you know, this is what I have for you today. There's no menu. That is my food fantasy.
It's so attached to exactly what's going on there in that location, in that place.
Yeah, and
it's
is.
Amazing.
And, like I say, I've been closing my eyes lately and just thinking about, you know, I can't wait to get back to St. Lucia and just sitting and, you know, enjoying the view and the smell and the fresh foods.
I think we all want to come with you, James, but that's just a perfect note to end on. Thank you so much for spoiling us today with the most fabulous food from Pots, Pans and Boards. I'm sure that Riyadh and Sally will join you.
Absolutely.
Thank you for spoiling us. That's amazing. Yes, you did. So delicious.
So awesome. Brilliant. Thank you. But we do have to announce the mystery ingredient. It, in fact, was... rosemary.
Was it rosemary? I guessed it was. It wasn't on our sheets.
It's not, so nobody accidentally gives it away, but it was rosemary. Dean, congratulations. You have won those four Tom's Roasts at Pots, Pans and Boards. That will be an absolute treat. Enjoy that. Riyadh Hamid, thank you so much.
Thank you so much, Sally.
Sally Prosser, thank you as always. It's been fabulous. And thank you to everybody who's been part of the show today and always. And
there's just so much more to hear.
Download our podcasts at DubaiEye1038.com.